everybody. Welcome back to the Tipsy Ghosts. We're your tipsy hosts, Sarah, and Lindsay.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy
birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Lindsay.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Did you guys plan that?
No.
Okay. It was beautiful.
We got you something.
Oh my gosh, you guys. You already took me out to dinner.
We wined and dined Linda tonight at the Olive Garden.
She's not putting out though.
Sarah asked me if I felt romanced and I was like.
It was the ambiance.
At the vino. OG. The vino.
The unlimited Alfredo and breadsticks. We really splurged.
I love that.
Her card says have a killer birthday and it's got a shark on it.
Did you make that?
I did.
It's so good.
Aw, thank you guys. They got me a Barnes & Noble gift card because you guys know me so well. And you know that I love books. And I was just there the other day and bought like 3 books. And so now I get to go back.
Now you get to go back.
Thank you guys.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. You guys are so sweet.
I know. Go on. Tell us more.
You guys are the best. You took me out to dinner. Mm-hmm. You got me a gift card to go get books. Mm-hmm. You gave me a birthday shot.
Yes.
All those things.
We are the greatest friends. You know what?
You guys are great friends. Thank you. I appreciate it. I love you guys too. And takes away the sting of getting another year older.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I think it's my own anxiety, but around this week, every year, I'm like, oh.
Well, you're the youngest one, so you have more to go.
I've felt this
Tell way me about I, it, Lynn.
I've felt this way since I turned 30. I don't know why. And first off, I'm younger than you by 6 months. So don't
it counts.
Even.
I am your elder. You should respect me.
Thank you guys very much. You guys know how to make a girl feel loved.
Yes. I have an update.
Okay.
I have watched 2 of the movies from your list.
Oh my gosh, I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Okay, what have you watched?
I watched, let's start with, the first one I watched was Insidious.
Okay.
Yay!
I still haven't watched that one.
That was my recommendation.
It was.
Okay.
It was good.
Yeah.
Twist ending.
Yes.
But it was good.
Were you scared?
There are multiple
It was a little
Insidiouses.
Spooky. Yes.
Insidii. If you will.
I will. The second one I watched is the 2006 The Omen.
Okay. Yay, you watched one for each
one. I watched that one too. That was my job.
So it was good.
Okay.
My struggle is that, spoiler alert, all the main characters died.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't like that.
He's the Antichrist. Nobody survives the Antichrist.
It's the exact same thing that happened to me in The Mist, basically, is all the main characters that I really liked died.
Yeah.
So.
See, I kind of like when all the main characters die because it's so unusual. Like, there's always the final girl. In all the horror movies, someone always survives.
Sure.
So I kind of like when they twist it and all of a sudden you're like, what? Everybody dies?
No,
it's unexpected.
I mean, it was a good movie. I did enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But the ending.
You know what? I'm not going to lie. The ending really pissed me off too. And I actually like sequels. Mm-hmm. I loved Insidious 2, 3, and 4. I liked them all.
Wait, what was the other movie you recommended her? Insidious and
Sinister.
Sinister. Okay, so I have seen Insidious. I have not seen Sinister.
And Sinister has a 1 and a 2, and they're both really good.
Mm. So I have seen Insidious, and that movie scared me.
It is pretty spooky.
Yeah, it was more of a slow burn, but I did like the ending. All right, so we are going to talk about true crime tonight, guys. Get us in the spooky season. We're going to spin, see who goes first.
Okay, let's do it.
No sound effects.
It's spinning.
White.
That is Lindsay.
Yay!
Birthday girl!
I go first. Okay. I am going to cover one of my favorite true crime cases of all time, probably, that is also a little spooky thrown in for spooky season.
I like it.
Takes place in California.
Hand, should we guess?
Oh, yes. It's very famous.
California, famous. Give me one more hint.
I'm going to give you a city to help narrow it down. L.A.
It wouldn't be Manson.
It is not Manson.
Wouldn't be Ramirez.
It's not Ramirez. It's not a serial killer.
Oh.
Oh. And you said it's spooky?
It is a unsolved.
Elisa Lam.
It is Elisa Lam.
I like Elisa Lam.
We haven't done that yet?
We have not done Elisa Lam.
Well, let's do it.
All right. So this, like I said, is a very well-known case. Elisa Lam was born April 30th, 1991 in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. She was the daughter of immigrants from Hong Kong and studied at the University of British Columbia. In mid-2010, she began a blog named Ether Fields on Blogspot, where she would post about her life, including her struggles with her mental health. She was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and depression. In January 2012, she had posted a blog post about a relapse that forced her to drop several classes, which left her feeling depressed. She titled it, quote, "You're always haunted by the idea you are wasting your life," end quote. And she would use this quote frequently over the years.
It's an interesting quote to reuse.
So she started a Tumblr account instead of the blog and used this again for quotes, fashion photos, and she would post some posts by herself, which again, good. Like Tumblr, is it like an online diary? I don't know.
Yes,
okay. And she used the same quotation there as well. January 2013, she took a trip to California alone. On January 26th, she checked into the Cecil Hotel in L.A.
The infamous Cecil.
The infamous Cecil. All right. She was given a shared room on the fifth floor, but her roommates complained about her odd behavior, and she was moved to a room of her own after 2 days.
Now, the Cecil was more like a hostel or like long-term. Like people lived there for long-term.
Yes.
And they could rent it for a while, correct. Right? Even though it was called a hotel.
Correct. So it was located near downtown Skid Row in L.A., and it was built as a business hotel in the 1920s, but then the Great Depression hit, and it faced a lot of financial hardships and never really recovered from that. Mm. The neighborhood around it started decaying, and basically it did too. So like you said, you could rent rooms there for like weeks on end. People could live in apartments there. It was kind of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where she was. The Cecil Hotel, by the way, is a dream place for me to go to.
For paranormal?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it has a very bloody history there. All right, so murders at the Cecil Hotel include, just over the years, 1964, Goldie Osgood was raped and murdered in her room, and this case has never been solved.
Terrible.
Both Jack Unterweger and Richard Ramirez stayed there.
Jack Unterweger. I know him. I almost did an episode on him.
You pronounced his name way better than I did. You put the German emphasis. I was not going for it. So Richard Ramirez, he's the OG Night Stalker. Tell us a little bit about Mr. Jack.
Oh God. He is another serial killer, but I can't remember what country he's from. Somewhere over in Europe.
It sounds like German.
It does sound like German, but it's not. Anyways, he had a rough upbringing and he was a serial killer, but also an author. So lots of people loved him and didn't really believe that he was actually a murderer. And he was a murderer and a rapist. People. He was a terrible person.
Yes, he was.
Mm-hmm.
So was Richard Ramirez.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Cecil is not in the best location, and it's not got the best reputation. We'll say that.
He was Austrian.
Austrian. There you go. Okay.
I was so close.
All right, so we're going to go back to Elisa. So she's staying at the Cecil. She's staying in her own room. She would contact her parents every day while she was traveling to check in, because she's a young 20-something and traveling alone in a
foreign country.
Yeah, she's from Canada, so it's a foreign country. So on February 1st, she was scheduled to check out of the Cecil and leave for Santa Cruz. Her parents did not hear from her on this day, so they called the LAPD and flew to LA immediately to find her. Which I'm like, good job, parents. Yeah, you guys are on it. So like, it makes me think they must have had like some kind of like contract with her. Like, hey, you have to check in every single day.
Yeah, she had some underlying mental health issues.
Yeah. Yep, she did. So hotel staff report that she was alone on that day. Katie Orphan, she was the manager of a nearby bookstore, said that she stopped by to get gifts to take home to her family and was outgoing, very lively, very friendly. So pretty much everyone they talked to that day who saw her said she was alone. She was never with anybody else. And she seemed normal. Police searched the hotel, including her room, and they even had dogs go through the building, including the rooftop, but the dogs were unsuccessful in finding her scent. They did not search every room in the hotel because they really didn't have probable cause at this point that a crime had even been committed, so they couldn't get a warrant to search everybody's room. So February 6th, 5 days later, LAPD put up flyers with her image all over the neighborhood and online, which is what brought the case to the public's attention and made it kind of like a national attention. February 15th, so another week has gone by, no sign of her. LAPD released a video of the last known sighting of her taken in one of the elevators on February 1st. And this is probably what everybody thinks of when they think of Elisa Lam. Definitely. This elevator video.
I mean, unfortunately, I'm sure she had a lot more to her than
right.
But yes.
But it's a very famous video. I mean, it's all over YouTube if you just search it.
Yeah.
It's 2.5 minutes of footage where she gets in the elevator, she gets out of the elevator, she gets in the elevator, she gets out of the elevator. She's pushing all of the buttons for all of the floors. She's making bizarre gestures and moves. Almost looks like she's talking to somebody, but we can't see anyone. Mm-hmm. It's very unsettling, I think, mm-hmm. is the best way to describe that video.
Yeah.
The doors were not closing. Like I said, it's 2.5 minutes of an elevator video, so that's a long time.
Right.
The video has been picked apart to shreds by yes. everybody all over the internet. Some believe that there are shoes of another individual seen in the corner. Who knows? So the video is what made this case famous because of her bizarre behavior. In just the first 10 days it was posted, it already had 3 million views.
Wow.
One theory of this video is that she is trying to escape someone pursuing her by using the elevator. And that's why she keeps getting in and out. So most of it, she's like hiding in the corner, like kind of over where the buttons are.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of looks out, peeps back in, looks out, peeps back in, gets out.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Others suggest that she is under the influence of some substances like ecstasy, because she just seems like she's on something. And others believe that she was manic and was having a psychotic episode. It has been found, or some people believe, that the video has been tampered with. So the timestamp is obscured. You can't see it. Parts of the video look slowed down. And nearly a minute of footage is removed. So some people believe that this was done where footage is removed because probably someone else was in the video who's unrelated to this and the police were trying to protect their identity and were like, this isn't important. Who knows? We don't know.
Hmm.
So during all of this, while this video is being posted online and people are looking at it, they're still searching for her. They still haven't found her. But then guests begin complaining about low water pressure and claimed that their water was black and brown with an unusual taste to it.
Oh, no.
This is like the part that disgusts me.
Oh, yeah. That's never a good sign.
Ugh, I hate it. So February 19th. So she went missing February 1st. Oh, 18 gosh. Days.
Yeah.
Santiago Lopez, who was a hotel maintenance worker, went up to check on the water tanks due to these complaints and found Elisa's body and one of the 4 1,000-gallon tanks on the roof that provided water to not only the hotel, but also a coffee shop.
Oh, I didn't know the coffee shop. Either.
That's disturbing. I mean, it's all disturbing, but...
Isn't that disturbing?
Ugh.
Think of all the coffee drinks that were made.
Oh, gosh. That's
in addition brushing to your teeth.
Oh, yeah.
In addition to all the people brushing their teeth, washing their hands, and taking showers.
Oh, yeah. I saw an interview with a couple that was staying there.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Cecil.
Yes.
Cecil, that was
yes.
the documentary?
Yes. The documentary on Netflix. I'm going to mention that later.
Sorry. Yeah.
It's okay. But, yeah. They interviewed people, and they were... Oh, gosh, I can't imagine.
Oof. They talked about just that. That's why I was bringing it up.
Ooh, that makes my stomach just
I know.
Not feel well.
It's
all gross. That Alfredo's going to come right back up.
So when he found her body, it is worth noting that the hatch was open on the water tank, and he saw her lying face up in the water, naked. So obviously they drained the tank right away. They cut open the water tank because the hatch was too small for them to get equipment to pull her body out in one piece.
Huh.
So February 21st, autopsy is completed and it rules it as an accidental drowning, but cited her bipolar disorder as a significant factor. So her body was found naked. Clothing similar to what she was wearing in the elevator video was floating in the water, coated in a sand-like particulate. Her watch and her room key were also with her as well, which they say when you're drowning, she might have tried to shed off all her layers because they were pulling her down, and that's why she might have been naked.
Mm. Yeah.
Her body was obviously moderately decomposed and bloated at that point because it had been 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. It was greenish with some marbling on the abdomen and skin separation evident.
Ew.
There was no evidence of any physical trauma, no evidence of any sexual assault, no evidence of any suicide. The toxicology showed, so first off, it showed there was no drugs in her system. Alcohol, it was very, very low, like probably she had like one drink, honestly. So the medications that she was prescribed quite a few. She was on Lamictal, she was on Seroquel, Effexor, Wellbutrin, and Dexedrin. These are all psychiatric medications. So they found... just some of those in her system, not all of them. So her levels were not therapeutic for all of them. So she wasn't taking all of her medications is what they're theorizing. Mm. Her Effexor was in her system. They think that she took that the day she died because it was pretty present. Her Wellbutrin was in her system as well, but they think it was not taken the day she died because it was a little bit faded. Her Seroquel was not in her system at all. And her Lamictal was not in her system at all either.
Stop me if you talk about this, but just to be prescribed all of those medications mm-hmm. in general mm-hmm. says something about the state of your mental health.
Right. So with bipolar disorder, a lot of times they prescribe mood stabilizers. They might prescribe some antipsychotics as well to help. So all of this to say, the medications that were in her system were basically her antidepressants.
I'm just going to say, she was missing the important ones.
She was missing her. The antipsychotics. Yeah. So that Seroquel was not in her system, and the Lamictal was not in her system, which is the mood stabilizer.
Yeah.
So she was just taking the antidepressants, which
right.
if you just take antidepressants and you're bipolar, that means your mania is going to go up, which is more likely
to be psychotic. I was just going to say, it makes it worse. Yes. Yeah, interesting.
Yes. And they can tell, so they looked at... basically, I guess when they do a toxicology report, they test the blood in the heart and the liver enzymes. And that's how they can tell. And so they can tell by how much of the protein is still left in the heart and the enzymes, how soon she took it, which is how they can tell. She took this the day she died. She hasn't taken this in a while.
That's so cool.
Isn't that so cool that you can do that yeah. after 3 weeks of her body decomposing?
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrific, but I mean, it's still sure. really cool.
Yeah. Science is really cool.
Yeah.
I agree. All right. So no other drugs in her system. She did have some ibuprofen in her system as well, which, you know, whatever. I take ibuprofen like every Same. Other day. Yeah. So her lungs were full of fluid.
Obviously.
She drowned.
Yeah.
So the main question is, how did she get up there? How did she get in the water tank?
Right.
We know how she died, but like, how did she get there? So the doors and the stairs that access the hotel's roof are locked, with only staff having passcodes and keys. Mm-hmm. Any attempt to force them open should trigger an alarm. But there is a fire escape that could have allowed her to bypass all of these measures that was pretty accessible. And her scent trail, when they brought the dogs in, was lost near a window that was connected to the fire escape.
Mm-hmm.
But also the dogs didn't pick up her scent on the roof, and they went up on the roof.
Hmm.
It's a little odd there.
But it's windy, I would assume, up on a high roof and maybe rain.
I don't know how dog scents work.
Yeah, I don't either. And like how, I mean, obviously, like it fades over time, right?
You I know rain. Water. Well, the dogs were up on the roof within like a couple days.
Oh, gotcha.
Because they didn't search the whole hotel, but they searched the roof, her room.
Yeah.
And like the lobby and stuff. Two of the lids of the water tank. So there's four water tanks. Two of the lids were open during the time. So when they eventually found her body, two tanks were open, two were not.
Hmm.
All four tanks are 4 feet by 8 feet cylinders propped up on concrete blocks. Hotel workers have to use a ladder to even look into the tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you know, they have heavy lids that would be difficult to close from within. So when they found her body, the lid was still open. So kind of some theories to combat some other theories. Like I said, you can spiral for days on this off of Reddit and just off of the internet. Mm-hmm. So the toxicology screen, people argue that it took 3 weeks for her autopsy to be performed, so drugs could be out of her system by then, or they didn't test for all the drugs. Like, typical tox screens, they're not going to test for MDMA, bath salts.
True, yeah.
The hard synthetic drugs.
And how long do those stay in your system?
Right.
Even? And I don't even know.
I don't know, with her being submerged in water and how badly right. her body was decomposed at that point. I don't know.
Yeah, there's lots of variables to consider.
Right. So it could be that she... I don't know. Could have been on drugs, but maybe it was already out of her system after 3 weeks.
Those bath salts are bad news.
They are.
Woo.
And they point out that, you know, the Cecil is right on Skid Row, which is a bad part of town, and very easy to get drugs there. So like the talk said, she was not using her meds. So the most widely believed theory is that she was in a manic or psychotic episode.
Which is corroborated by the bookstore clerk.
Right.
Her idea or... her perception of how she was acting whenever she was there.
Right. Yeah. And honestly, watching the video, that was my first
I mean, it makes sense.
Clue.
Yeah.
She's got, you know, psychomotor agitation, which is just, you know, the bizarre movements that are sporadic.
And she's clearly, like, talking to somebody.
Talking to someone who's not there. Right. She seems paranoid because she keeps looking out. At one point, I mean, she pushes all the buttons, first off, on the elevator floor. Odd. So okay, one of the main things about the video that people point out is the elevator doors are still open. Why are they open for 2 minutes? She pushed the elevator door, and they say, like, to hold the elevator door, it takes, like, a minute for it to hold.
Well, and then she keeps stepping, like, in the beam.
Right. She kept stepping in, and then she pushed it again. So, yeah. I mean.
Yeah. I get that.
She seems very paranoid in that video.
Yeah.
The autopsy, another critique of this is the autopsy was incomplete. So they did a rape kit on her, but they never announced the results of it. And they said partly because they had, like, such short manpower, and, like, to run a whole rape kit takes time and people, and nothing pointed to her being assaulted.
Ugh, that excuse kills me.
I know.
I know. I'm like, what?
They're like, there was no evidence of sexual assault on her body. Everybody said she was by herself. That's what the rape
kit is for. I know. I hate that. I know you didn't make that.
I know.
But I hate that.
They also did not run the fingernail kit to see what was underneath her fingernails.
Sure.
What? Why not?
Records did say in the autopsy that she had subcutaneous pooling of blood in her anal area. They say this could be because of sexual abuse. It could be because of bloating and decompensation.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, she was face up, right?
Yeah, so. Face up. Her rectum was prolapsed as well.
Oh, geez.
So, I mean, it could be.
What a mess.
Yeah, because of the bloating and being in water for 3 days.
I mean, but it's still worth looking into, especially in that scenario.
Right.
That's unfortunate.
When you have nothing to go off of, I feel like you should look into everything.
Right.
But it's not my job.
No, I get it.
So...
Her phone has never been found. It was not found with her body or in her hotel room. It is assumed by police that it was stolen at some point around her death, but her Tumblr blog was updated after she went missing. So they think this is an automatic function, just like on Instagram. You can set up future updates.
Posts, yeah.
But then they're like, well, her phone was never found. Did someone actually update her Tumblr from her phone?
It was just that one time, too. So.
Yeah, it was just that one time.
Man. Things are weird.
Interesting that her phone was never found.
Yeah.
Her hotel room key and her watch were in the water tank with her, but not her phone.
Maybe that's why she was paranoid. She lost her phone.
I don't know. And, you know, I don't go anywhere without my phone.
I know.
So, your phone is your lifeline.
Especially in that part of town.
Yeah.
Right.
In a foreign country.
In a foreign country, you would not be anywhere without your phone. And if your phone had been stolen, I would think, like, if I was traveling alone and my phone was stolen, the first people I would be calling, like, from the hotel would be my parents. To be like, hey, my phone's stolen.
Right.
Help me out.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Maybe.
Right.
Maybe she lost it.
So September 2013, her parents did file a wrongful death suit, claiming that the hotel failed to inspect and seek out hazards in the hotel that presented an unreasonable risk of danger to Elisa and other hotel guests. The hotel argued, basically, like, how do we even know how she got into the water tanks? We don't know. Therefore, like, we can't say we could have prevented it. So, because of that, it was settled.
Yeah.
Nothing happened. The suit was dismissed. Mm-hmm. But, some fun facts. 2005. So, 8 years before Elisa went missing, there is a horror film called Dark Water. Have you guys seen this?
No.
No.
Okay, so it is a horror film called Dark Water I've seen, and it is about this mother and daughter who live in this apartment building, and the water starts turning brown and tastes funky, and her daughter's seeing these visions of this little ghost girl. Find a little ghost girl up in the water tanks on the roof of the building.
That does sound so familiar, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that creepy how closely that, like, that correlates?
It's actual... a reality.
Right. So it's a remake of, like, a Japanese horror film.
Yeah. Oh, man, they're so good at making horror films.
They are. So it strongly resembles the case. It's just a little freaky to me. Ghost Adventures did a special on Elisa's death. And also, Shane went, or it wasn't Shane, it was Ryan before he met Shane. Before Shane was on BuzzFeed. Oh,
yes.
I forget what the other guy's name was, but it was Ryan and someone.
I can't remember his name either, but he was even more cynical than Shane was. Yes. Yeah.
So they went there. And then there is a very amazing documentary on Netflix called The Vanishing at the Cecil Hotel. I recommend it, but I also had some problems with it because I feel like they interviewed a lot of, like, hotel people, but YouTubers and people who were trying to solve this case from the internet who talked about how affected they were and how Elisa felt like family to them. And I'm like, you don't know her.
Right.
I get you're trying to solve this case, but, like, it's kind of like a disservice to, like, her actual family who is actually grieving this.
Right. Don't make this about you.
Don't make this about you.
Right.
And, like, one of them said, like, I totally disagree with the autopsy. I'm like, what do you know about the autopsy?
Okay.
You weren't there. You haven't examined the body. Like,
where's your medical degree, sir?
Right. So, it's a very well done documentary about the hotel and the history with it and Elisa's case. Mm-hmm. But, like, also, they're interviewing all these people who literally have no idea any more than I know
about this case. I don't remember any of the YouTuber stuff. I just remember like the history and the people who stayed there, that couple specifically.
They did interview that couple who stayed there, and I thought that was good.
Yeah, I thought that was well done.
Basically, her death is ruled as an accidental drowning.
I mean,
I think that's honestly the best we're going to get.
I don't think this one's going to be solved. I just don't.
I honestly think after deep diving for, I mean, I've been looking into this case for years. I honestly think that she just was not taking her meds. It triggered a psychotic episode. She maybe thought someone was after her. She went up there and got stuck. They said basically like when she got in there, the level would have been so high she would have been able to get out. But like as people are using water, it kept going down and then she got trapped.
It was slow, painful.
And eventually drowned.
Man. I mean, it's horrible, but my gut feeling, which isn't a lot, says that as well.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
But well, I just think it's a very good story and it's kind of creepy.
It's definitely creepy and sad.
Go watch the elevator video if you guys haven't already.
Man. True crime. True crime.
Brings you down. All right. You guys are welcome. There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was good.
I'm just really surprised we haven't covered that before.
Yeah. I know. I've been wanting to, and I was like, you know what? This is kind of a creepy, unsettling case. Let's do it for Halloween season.
Good job.
Thank you.
Spooky season.
Spooky Susan.
That's me.
It's the spooky season
for the spooky season.
That was beautiful.
Thank you. We're going to spin, and then we'll do a shot before you start.
It's a me.
It's a Sarah.
Mario.
It's all been
a while since I've gone last. Also, are we going to continue the guessing game?
Sure.
Did you do a well-known case?
I gave you two hints on mine, so.
Wait, where was the location again? Tell me again.
Texas. Don't you remember the alien in cowboy boots and hat that I sent in the picture?
I didn't know that was a...
That wasn't my hint, but hint. It was a...
Is it about cowboy. Aliens?
No.
Okay, well then I'm
Is
not
it about cowboys it. In Texas?
No.
Dang it!
Then how was that a hint?
Well, you said yeehaw.
Oh,
and I responded. No, that wasn't the hint. The other hint was a question, and then I said, "Okay, my story's in Texas."
Well, you said, "Like, is it around Halloween?"
Uh huh.
Okay, so this is the GIF that you sent us. It's an alien walking in a Speedo and a cowboy hat.
I thought you'd like it. Nobody said anything.
Hang on, Halloween in Texas.
Everybody... Oh, is it going to be about Leatherface?
No.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre is where my mind went.
Ed Gein, but I don't think that happened in Texas.
It didn't. It
was I know.
North.
I was just trying to think if she was being creative with Texas. Okay. And the rest is you saying what time you'll be here. I don't know. I have no guesses.
The rest is Lindsay not responding.
First off, Lindsay was sleeping.
I really thought that you had been injured somehow.
So on Wednesdays, I sleep and then I get up and go get them. And then we have swim lessons right after.
Yes, yes, yes.
Sorry. So I was not looking at my phone.
It's fine.
No, I still don't know. Texas, yeehaw. I don't know.
All right. Well,
Halloween.
This is about Ronald Clark O'Brien, a.k.a. the Candyman.
That was my second guess.
No, it's not.
I was like, oh, really? I didn't know that was even the Candyman's real name.
Like, based off
was your other guess when you said, have you guys seen the new Candyman movie?
I almost said something.
Well, that was me.
Oh, she said that, okay. And I almost said, oh, speaking of Candyman, then I didn't want to ruin it because I don't think that the movie is related to the story.
That was my question and just answered it.
Not that I know of, but listen to this and then you tell me.
I can't wait to listen to your story.
Thank you. Okay. Well, his name's Ronald. Ronald O'Brien.
Ronald O'Brien.
Rono.
Ron O'Brien. Yeah. He was born October 19th, 1944. And honestly, there's really not much about his history. So all I know is that really he lived in Deer Park, Texas.
Okay.
Where is that?
I have no idea. You're the one who did the story.
You're from Texas.
I'm not from United Texas. States. Okay. I lived there for 2 years and it's a very big state.
What? It's tiny. I'm just kidding. Okay. He lived in Deer Park, Texas with his wife. It says Danine, but I'm going to call her Danine.
Danine. I like that better.
Yeah. They had a son named Timothy. He was born April 5th, 1966.
Sure.
And later on, they had a girl named Elizabeth, born in 1969.
Okay.
Ronald worked as an optician. Just an optician. I'm assuming that somebody works at the opticians.
Are you trying to say like an optometrist?
Did you have a stroke?
Okay. Like an eye doctor's office?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that one.
I was like, what are you, optician?
No, he worked as an optician.
Okay, so maybe he was like an assistant.
Okay, that's what I was trying to say, okay. But then my words got jumbled after that.
Okay, gotcha.
But I think you know what I was trying to say.
I got there.
Okay, so he was an optician. And also he was a deacon at the Second Baptist Church, where he sang in the choir and was in charge of the local bus program.
It's always the deacons.
Never a good sign.
No offense to deacons, but Dennis Rader.
More like decant.
But I'm ching.
Oh, Boyson's back with us.
Oh, she's entered. Here we are.
But Dennis Jason Rader, wasn't he a deacon too in his church? Probably. Like all
he was,
these.
He was a weirdo too.
All these people.
So really, that's all I know about his history. We're going to fast forward to his crime here. Okay.
Love
Okay. Great. October 31st,
Halloween!
1974.
Halloween. Say that.
Okay. Sorry.
Would you like to say it too? Halloween.
Yes.
Ronald took both of his children trick-or-treating in
Tim
Pasadena.
Elizabeth.
Tim and Elizabeth. Eliza.
No. He took them trick-or-treating in Pasadena, Texas.
What were they dressed up as?
Don't know.
You're both on Jason the wrong part of
and
this.
Freddie.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Michael Myers wasn't there?
The dad was Michael Myers.
Oh, Candyman was Michael.
All right. So they also went with his they also went with his neighbor and their two kids. Okay. All right. So there's a big group of them. They went to a house and nobody was there to give them any candy. So the kids just gave up and they went on to the next house as they do. Like they got over. They didn't want to wait. Ronald decided to stay back though, which was kind of weird. He eventually caught up with the group. And when he arrived, he showed them that he had gotten 5 pixie sticks, which he said were given to him from the occupant of the last house, the one that they didn't wait around at.
I know this story.
Don't
please
ruin
keep
it.
Going.
Is he going after people who don't Lindsay, give out candy?
Shush.
Is he coming after me?
Can you just... You're going to hate this story. I'm just going to... I'm going to warn you. You're going to hate this story.
I already hate it. Just kidding.
So, you know, these were like when you were kids, these were like the big ass pixie sticks. That you like 21 dump inches. Like not these little ass ones. Like they were just like... That was the jackpot. Like when you went to their house.
Jackpot. Okay.
Ouch. What? God bless. What kind of situation are you in?
Humanly possible, I don't think.
Sounds horrible.
It's like your third leg.
That's what they call it.
Okay, where was I? Big ass pixie sticks.
Pixie sticks, the big ones. All right. 21 inches.
Jack, you know what I'm talking about when you go to the houses and they had like the real, you know.
They had them at the roller skating rink.
Oh. Yeah. I was thinking Halloween candy. Okay. I wasn't there.
Lindsay did not have the. Were you not allowed to go roller skating?
Other gods were involved in roller skating.
Treat, but I was roller skating.
Zeus is there in real life.
You need to give background so people.
Medusa.
I mentioned I was not allowed to watch Hercules, the child's movie, and so I watched it in college for the first time.
Tell them why.
They were like, "Why weren't you?" We talked about this at dinner, and they're like, "Why weren't you allowed to watch Hercules?" Because it had other gods in it. Duh.
I'm like, well, besides Hades, Zeus.
And Zeus was involved. All of them. Like, Hera was there. All of them were there.
At a party for like 5 seconds. Yeah. But yeah, okay, yeah.
Listen, I'm not saying that my parents' rules made sense, but.
Doesn't even faze me anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, are we surprised by any of this?
Anyways, okay.
Pixie sticks.
They got these.
Get there?
So he just showed him. He was like, look what I got.
Yep.
You guys missed out.
And they were like, oh, awesome.
Right. So, okay, when they were done trick-or-treating, they went home. Yep. He gave 2 the pixie sticks to the neighbor children and 1 to each of his own children.
Okay.
The 5th was given to a 10-year-old boy who he recognized from his own church.
Okay.
So he handed them all out, like a nice guy would do, right? Like,
sure. I don't think he's a nice guy.
So, like children do on Halloween, Timothy, his son, asked if he could have some of his candy before bed. And Ronald claims that he chose the pixie sticks candy. Timothy had trouble getting the powder out of the tube, so Ronald actually helped him loosen the powder because it was like kind of stuck in there to make it easier. Once Timothy tasted the candy, he complained that it tasted bitter, so Ronald gave him a drink to wash away the taste.
No, I hate this story.
I told you were going to hate it. Sadly, Timothy began saying almost immediately after eating the candy that his stomach hurt and he began vomiting and convulsing. And Ronald claims that he went limp in his arms. Timothy O'Brien died en route to the hospital less than an hour after he ate the candy. Obviously, this created a sense of panic in the Deer Park community. And people turned in their children's candy to the police because they were all scared that it was laced with poison. Initially, Ronald was not suspected of having anything to do with Timothy's death, and that is until the autopsy was done. So the autopsy showed that the Pixie Sticks candy that he had eaten was laced with a fatal dose of potassium cyanide, unfortunately. So four of the Pixie Sticks were recovered by authorities and had not yet been eaten by the other children. So one was eaten by Timothy, the other three were recovered, and the other one was still missing. Okay. The parents of the child who had the fifth Pixie Stick were unable to locate the candy, and they became hysterical. Apparently, they ran upstairs to check on the boy and found him asleep holding the candy in his hand. And luckily for them, the candy had been stapled shut and the boy was unable to open it himself, so he was unable to eat the candy.
Oh my goodness.
And that's what saved his life. It turns out that all the Pixie Sticks had been opened and the top 2 inches were refilled with cyanide powder and then stapled shut.
Gotcha. Okay.
According to the pathologist who tested the candy, there was enough cyanide in Timothy's Pixie Stick. Pixie Sticks. Sounds like I'm saying it plural, but it's S-T-I-X is how it's spelled, just FYI. So anyways, he had enough in his own Pixie Sticks to kill 2 adults.
Dang.
And the other four had enough to kill 3 to 4 adults.
Oof.
So he just like went way overboard.
Yeah, I mean, he was dead in an hour.
That's yeah.
Quick.
Yeah. Poor guy. Mm-hmm. When police questioned Ronald, he initially said that he couldn't remember who gave him the candy or which house he got them from. Because he's going to deny everything outright. Police thought this was weird, though, because it rained that night and they'd only been trick-or-treating to 2 streets before they called it a night. So, like, surely you'd remember where you went.
Right.
Can't be that hard. He was finally able to lead them to the house where no one was home that Halloween night. And he claimed that after the group moved on to the next house, he waited a little longer. And then suddenly the front door opened just a crack and a hairy arm reached out and handed him 5 Pixie Sticks.
Sure, sure.
And closed the door.
That sounds legit. It sounds like a werewolf. A hairy arm. I'm here.
Sounds like Bigfoot.
Well, that was a cat.
That sounds like the perfect way to get candy. Ooh, hello, mysterious hairy arm.
Stapled shut you for the candy. Pixie Sticks. You yes. know what? This looks great.
This looks great. Let me give it to my child.
Thank you, hairy arm man. Unfortunately for Ronald, the house belonged to a man named Courtney Melvin. And he had been at work that night until 11 p.m. And over 200 people vouched for him, saying he was at work that night. So
good job, co-workers.
He had an alibi. Police discovered that Ronald was over $100,000 in debt. And they also learned that he was unable to hold a job, was about to lose his current job as an optician. And his car was going to be repossessed, among many other things that really didn't really look great for him at the time. Hmm. Turns out in January 1974, so January of the same year, this all happened in October, so we're okay, backpedaling right. a little bit.
Because of Halloween, yes.
Yeah. He had taken out $10,000 life insurance policies on both of his children. And so in 2020, that's more than $50,000.
That's a lot of money.
I converted each? That myself.
$50,000 each?
Yes.
Dang.
I'm kidding. I did not convert that myself.
No, I believe you.
But yeah, $10,000 then is like $50,000 last year. Okay, so in September of 1974, he took out an additional 20,000 policies on both children.
Jeez.
And then just days before Timothy died, he took out another $20,000 policy on each child.
So he meant to kill both of his kids.
Absolutely. His wife claims that she didn't know anything about these life insurance policies, and police quickly learned that the day after Timothy died, Ronald called the insurance company to see about collecting the money.
Jeez, buddy.
What a big jerk.
Yeah.
Another suspicious thing that Ronald did, like as if the other stuff wasn't bad
right,
enough.
Right, right.
Police found out that Ronald had gone to a chemical supply store just to inquire about cyanide.
Just curious. Nobody just inquires about cyanide.
And he didn't buy anything, though, at the time, which was weird because he realized that the smallest amount you could buy was a 5-pound bag, and he didn't need that much. So, but he asked a bunch of questions. So it was pretty obvious by this time that he had likely poisoned his kids in an effort to collect their insurance policies. And police think that he gave it to the other kids to help cover up his crime. On November 5th, 1974, he was indicted on one count of capital murder and four counts of attempted murder. He pled not guilty, and the case went to trial. And during trial, a chemist said that the year prior, Ronald had contacted him and just asked about how much cyanide would be fatal for a person. Weird.
Why do people not report these phone calls to the police?
I don't know. I mean,
this like, hey, somebody called me and asked me how much cyanide would kill someone. Just heads up.
But like weird.
But he's just curious.
He's just curious.
I mean, I'm curious about lots of things with true crime, and I don't think I would ever call someone and ask that.
Luckily, we have Google.
Yeah. I don't think I would ever Google that. Our Google
searches. That would be awful. So a chemical supply salesman also testified that Ronald had asked the same thing. How much cyanide does it take? His wife said that the night that Timothy ate the pixie sticks, he didn't actually choose it, but Ronald actually forced him to choose it. So June 3rd, 1975, the next year, a jury took only 46 minutes to find him guilty of all charges and only 71 minutes to sentence him to death by electrocution.
Yeah, he killed his own kid.
I know. He was described as, quote, absolutely friendless in prison, because even by prison standards, killing a child is horrific.
Yeah, they hate, sure. like, pedophiles, child mm-hmm. murderers, they hate them.
Yeah, I mean, as you should. It's horrible. His execution date had been moved up multiple times, and ultimately he was killed by lethal injection, which was interesting, because I'm sure something happened between the
right.
electrocution and the lethal injection. On March 31st, 1984, he claims he was innocent right up until the very end. And his last statement was still something about, like, I'm innocent and I forgive all of you for accusing me. You know, I'm the victim here.
Oh, my gosh.
Sure. Thanks for that.
Right.
So he never even gave his wife closure to, like.
No, she divorced his ass as soon as he went to prison. She was like, oh, fuck you. I thought this was funny, though. Like. Interesting, funny. During his execution, a crowd of over 300 people gathered outside and yelled trick or treat while throwing candy at the anti-death penalty crowd.
Whoa.
I mean.
That's kind of funny.
What? I mean, you don't need to throw it at the anti-death penalty crowd, but like just maybe at the prison. Yeah, we don't need to throw it at each other, but like.
Right.
I love that.
But also, if you're going to throw something at me, throw me candy.
You know what? You're right.
Like, it's the worst things and you could throw
right.
at me.
You're exactly right. I didn't even think about it like that. So, there you go. I have the downer story of the Candyman.
Oh, no. I got hit in the face with a Reese's cup.
Oh, my God. I guess I must eat. It better be a fucking, like, pumpkin
yes. Reese's cup. Oh, my gosh.
Cup, so or I'm going to be pissed.
Oh, look. There's the Skittles.
What's your favorite candy?
Oh gosh, Reese's peanut butter cups are my fave. Like any kind, like even the Reese's eggs.
Yeah, the shapes are the best.
Yes, the absolutely. Shapes are way better. I do love Starburst jelly beans.
Oh, those are really good too.
I love yeah. those.
All right, we're ready right. for you.
Thank you for the Candyman. That is nothing like the movie.
I actually can't remember if I've seen the Candyman. If I have, it didn't really stand out to me.
I have not.
I have. I've seen the original.
It's hard for me to watch, like, the original movies now. I don't know.
When did you guys ever hear of the urban legend of, like, needles in your candy?
Okay, and,
like,
yes. Yes. Yeah. So
razor blades.
While I was looking yes. at this, mm-hmm. they said that, like, all of that, there's no actual evidence to back that up, except for somewhere, I think, like, Minnesota or Wisconsin, somewhere up there, that a person had hid needles in Snickers bars on Halloween, but only one person was affected by that. And they did not die. They opened it up and they bit and found the needle. But what the fuck?
Why do people do things?
Why do people do things? Oh, but it's something that we all worry about. Like,
yes.
Big time. And really, it's probably not as big of a worry as we make it. But still, that one or two times that it happens is horrible.
Well, like back in the day, don't ask me the time frame, but there used to be an option for kids to take their Halloween candy to get x-rayed. To make sure there wasn't any, like, metal, needles, razors in it.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that either.
Should we continue guessing? Guessing sure. the story?
Remind me of your state. Gosh.
Virginia.
Virginia. It is not.
Give me one other hint.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hint. Guess it. And the name is, or the word is penis.
Oh, God. Oh, it's Lorena Bobbitt.
I was going to say, is this Bobbitt?
Yes.
Yay!
Nailed it.
I've seen a documentary about her.
Perfect.
You said yay.
I was just going to say, it's a case I have a lot of feelings about, so let's go.
Okay.
Perfect. Lorena Bobbitt became a household name and the center of many jokes when she cut off her husband's penis. Mm-hmm.
She did do that.
But her story is a lot more than that. And we'll take it back to the beginning to begin with. Lorena Gallo. It's spelled G-A-L-L-O, but she's from Ecuador, so we're going to say Gallo.
Gallo.
Okay, sounds great.
I'm with you.
Born in 1969, then from Ecuador, she grew up in Caracas, Venezuela. Her dad was a dental technician. She had two younger siblings. For her quinceañera, she was gifted a trip to the United States, and it made such an impact that her dream was to live there.
American dream, baby.
Her family was unable to immigrate, but in 1987, she got a student visa. She worked as a nanny and then at a nail salon while attending community college. Just a year later, in 1988, she met John Bobbitt, who was a Marine, and they met at a club for enlisted men. They hit it off, and they married the following year in June of 1989. Lorena was 20. John was 22. John became violent just a few weeks after their wedding. She criticized him for reckless driving on the way home from a bar, and after that, he hit her. Violence continued from there, escalating to further physical assault as well as rape. At one point, she got pregnant, and John forced her to get an abortion. In addition to that, at the clinic, he taunted her about the procedure, telling her that it would kill her. They fell on hard times financially and struggled to make the mortgage payments on just Lorena's paychecks from the nail salon. She took to shoplifting dresses to keep up appearances and to keep John attracted to her and not other women. Police were called to their residence on multiple occasions. In February of 1991, John pleaded guilty to assault and battery. The charges were later dismissed and he went to counseling. John and Lorena separated in October of 91, but it was only temporary, and they got back together in April of 93 and moved into an apartment in Manassas, Virginia. Just 2 months after getting back together, Lorena was working on the process of filing a protective order against John. Things were just that bad. John maintained that he was never abusive, that Lorena was very jealous and abusive to him, and he only acted in self-defense. He said that Lorena was upset that he planned to divorce her, and this put her green card on the line. Lorena denies this claim, or any claim, that the marriage was only to help her gain citizenship. So, that's a little bit about the history. There's the story.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm giggling.
Okay.
So, here's the story on the infamous incident.
Okay. I was like, you're not ending the story there, right?
That's it. That's all I got.
There's the story.
You're missing the main point here.
I'm like, cool. So, that opening sentence was
there's the backstory.
Yeah, got it.
June 23rd, 93. John came home drunk. He then raped Lorena and went to bed. She saw a knife in the kitchen, and something just clicked in her. She took the knife to the bedroom where John was sleeping and cut off his penis.
Hey.
Lorena then took the knife and the penis and drove away. She tossed the penis into a field on the way to a friend's house, and later her friend encouraged her to call the police, which she did, and she told them the location of the penis.
How do you even... Okay. Proceed.
I feel like it's pretty notable.
I mean, if she's driving on her way to her friends, it's probably like she knows the way. She knows all the...
I don't know. I feel like if I put myself in her position, I've been like in a manic state, like, I don't know what's happening. Mm-hmm.
Why? Yeah. Okay. She remembered.
Okay, well.
And luckily, police were able to locate the severed member, put it on ice in a hot dog box, and rush it to the local hospital.
But why the hot dog box?
I mean, that's all they had because they just got hot dogs at Quick Trip.
It was 7-Eleven, but yes.
It was 7-Eleven? Shut up.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I'm so... I know this.
Oh my god, so, it's too much.
Yeah, they rushed it to the hospital because this is an emergency. A man lost his penis here. Good. Doctors performed a 9.5 hour surgery to reattach it and restore it to almost full function.
I like how you said that with a question mark.
Because I don't know what it functions as, but it's at almost full function.
Okay.
That doesn't sound good enough.
So at the same time, at the same hospital.
Gosh, like, you can edit this part out, but, like, urethra, like, how you pee and all that, that's all messed up, isn't it?
That's why he had a urologist and a plastic surgeon working on it.
Oh. Of course he did. Of course he did.
Like, I don't care about the, like nobody, able to get an erection, but I'm like, how's he pee? Like,
it's in the 90s. The man lost his penis. That was the most important thing they
could have worked on. Nobody gives a fuck that she was raped, but let's all rush to him. We're going to get
there. Because at the same time, at the same hospital, Lorena had a rape kit completed.
Okay, good for her.
Later that year, John goes on trial for marital sexual assault and was found not guilty.
Of course, yeah.
Early the next year, Lorena's trial begins. She had been charged with malicious wounding, which could have resulted in 20 years in prison and deportation. She testified that her husband was physically, sexually, and emotionally abusive throughout their marriage. And her defense team argued that she had been tormented by years of abuse and driven temporarily insane.
Sure.
They argued that in the moment, slicing off John's penis was a mix of self-defense and an irresistible impulse due to both clinical depression and post-traumatic stress disorder from the abuse.
Okay.
So John testified that he never committed any acts of violence against her, but there were witnesses who said otherwise. Witnesses said that Lorena had bruises and that they had seen him hitting and shoving her. Even John's friends said that they had heard him express a liking for forced sex.
Mm. But also, like, good for his friends for, like,
yeah,
speaking up being like, him. Hey, that's yeah. not cool.
Yeah. So by this time, the oddity of the circumstances around the case were very public. It was a media whirlwind, and while the media focused on John's penis,
of course,
advocacy groups rallied behind Lorena. Women's rights activists hoped that this incident could lead to domestic violence awareness. It was early 90s, after all. The Hispanic community showed up in support of Lorena.
You know, it's funny. I mean, I was pretty young when this happened, mm-hmm. but, like, I don't remember hearing about any advocacy groups. It's, like, the only thing everybody talked about was him,
his penis,
and his member.
Yep. But the case was also wildly popular in the tabloids and with comedians. A local radio station served hot dogs and slice soda.
Wait, slice soda?
Slice.
It's a brand.
Oh, okay. Okay. Gotcha. I'm like, also, what?
I mean, they carried it away in a hot dog box.
Yep. chocolate penises and t-shirts with the slogan Manassas. A cut above the rest were available. In the end, Lorena was found not guilty due to temporary insanity and did not spend time in prison. However, she did have to do 45 days of a psych evaluation in a facility and afterwards was released. She ended up staying in Manassas after and became a U.S. citizen in 1994. The divorce was final the following year. She earned a living as a cosmetologist and administrative assistant and a real estate agent.
Jeez.
In 97, she made the news again when she was charged with assault for punching her mother while they watched TV. But she was later acquitted and her mother continued living with her.
Oh my gosh. What were they watching?
I don't know.
Are they watching, like, WWE or... Why you punch someone while you're watching TV? They
had a difference of opinions.
Maybe they wanted to watch something different.
It's funny you say that. So she did meet another guy, David Bellinger, and they grew to be close friends before a romantic relationship developed. They had a daughter in 2005, and even though they were very close, she chose not to marry again. In 2007, the Lorena Gayo Foundation was created to help victims of domestic violence and their children to raise awareness on the issue. She later explained that she didn't know there was an option to go to a shelter during her marriage, and she was often too scared to call the police for help for fear of deportation. In 2009, John and Lorena appeared together on Oprah. This was their first meeting since the divorce, and he used that time to apologize to her for the way he treated her during their marriage. Lorena claimed that he still loved her because he would still send her Valentine's Day cards and flowers. John tried several different avenues to make money to help pay for his medical bills. He formed a band called The Severed Parts.
See? Stop it. Okay, he can't get upset about people making fun of it if he's going to make fun of it.
Yeah, he's not the butt of the jokes. She is. And we'll get to that. So The Severed Parts were unsuccessful. And they severed Weird. Ways.
Yeah, I've never heard of them.
Did you get my joke? They severed ways. They severed ties.
Besides, there it is. Parted ways.
Severed ties, parted ways. I was like, you. Severed ways?
Severed ways.
I got you. That was good.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Give it a C plus.
Howard Stern was involved in raising around $250,000 to go towards his medical bills.
I remember Howard Stern being involved, of course.
By the way, Howard Stern is quoted as saying, I don't even buy that he was raping her. She's not that great looking.
Whoa, Howard Stern. Butt head alert.
God.
Then he starred. Dick. Then he what? Starred in adult films titled Uncut. And
I can't with Frankenpenis. You know what? No.
Wait, these were the titles of documentaries about him?
No, adult they were porns.
Films. Oh, adult films.
I heard documentaries films. Of the adult version.
I heard films, but I didn't hear the adult part.
You can call them documentaries. That's fine.
So he starred as a porn star.
Yes. Called Frankenpenis.
So obviously he's uncut. Not that insecure about his penis. It must have looked great after they attached
rumor
it.
Rumor on the street is that it was even bigger afterwards. Okay, so he also appeared on WWE, Monday WWE. Night Raw, where he was featured as Val Venus.
I cannot Venus? With him.
Women are from Venus.
It rhymes with penis.
I know, but women are from Venus. Women are from Venus.
Sure.
This is not even a good pun. It makes no sense.
Women are from penis. Men are from bars.
Anyway, so he was charged with striking a 21-year-old former exotic dancer and convicted of battery. He was sentenced to 15 days in jail and was told by the judge, I firmly believe you have an attitude problem. Your attitude problem is caused by your drinking. He held several odd jobs and had other run-ins with the criminal justice system.
As if his drinking or his attitude wasn't a problem before all this stuff?
I think he had an attitude before the
drinking. I think he's just acknowledging that he's got a problem.
Sure. Okay.
He held several odd jobs and had other run-ins with the criminal justice system for battery of his new wife. And they also divorced.
He really learned his lesson here.
Yeah.
I feel like he really took all of this to heart.
No, he was like set on a pedestal when all this happened. They were like, oh, we're so sorry. Let's fix all your problems.
He is the star of Frank and Weenie, okay?
Frank and Penis.
Frank and Penis. It's a Frank and Weenie a kids movie.
It's a whole different route.
Frank Lindsay, and Weenie. Is that your sexy talk?
Frank and Weenie is a kids movie. Oh my gosh. Frank and Weenie. The shots are hitting me.
So they also divorced.
Him and his new wife.
New wife.
Who he assaulted. Okay. Yes.
Oh, God.
So many people remember this case for one reason, though.
The penis.
And the name has become synonymous with penis removal. There have been countless jokes, skits, TV shows, comedy sketches, etc. There were copycat crimes, although most were self-inflicted or accidents.
I didn't know there was copycat crimes.
Mm-hmm. There is even a type of worm. Named after them because it devours its prey with its scissor-like jaws. It's called the bobbit worm.
Oh. My gosh.
She used a knife, though.
Did she use a knife or she used scissors?
A knife, but still.
I feel like those are different, but okay.
Yeah, so really, though, the point to drive home is that this case, however bizarre it may be, brought attention to the issue of domestic violence and marital rape.
Yes.
Marital rape at the time was only recently a crime recognized by all 50 states, and in Virginia, it was very difficult to prove. To this day, the focus is on the fact that a distraught wife cut off her husband's penis, not the string of witnesses at the trial who testified that they had seen bruises on Lorena's arms and her neck, or that she called 911 repeatedly, or that John bragged to his friends about forcing his wife to have sex. So, as I mentioned above, John has been arrested several times since the trial for violence against two or more women. And this is kind of where Jordan Peele comes in.
Oh, no.
Oh, I love Key and Peele.
Same. So in 2019, he released a 4-part documentary called Lorena. And if you're interested in watching, it's on Amazon Prime.
This is what I have seen.
Yes. So it begins in 1993 at the height of the media attention. Peele said, quote, there's a third character to this story besides Lorena and John, and that is us, society, and what we did with the information that we had available to us. Mm-hmm. So basically, the documentary questions how much we knew about or acknowledged domestic violence versus what we know now. And at the time, the public reaction reflected a lack of empathy for victims of sexual and domestic violence. The documentary ends with a number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline, but does not focus solely on that and does not take sides. It doesn't gloss over the comedy aspect of the topic either, because, you know, it's Jordan Peele. Right.
But also, like...
But he's been doing serious stuff, too.
He has.
John Bobbitt
but I mean,
made money off of that joke.
Right. Like, if he hadn't made all this money off this joke, done the porn movies, WWE, whatever, the band... I would have had more sympathy for him.
Right.
Like, he owned it.
So, Jordan Peele discussed with Lorena beforehand and about the comedy, and she had a pretty good outlook on it. She said, I was the subject of so many jokes in the 90s, and to me, it's just cruel. They didn't understand. Why would they laugh about my suffering? She said, I'll put myself through the jokes and everything as long as I can shine a light on domestic violence and sexual assault and marital rape. And I must point out that while the rate of serious intimate partner violence against women has declined by 72% from 1994 to 2011, domestic violence remains a common and underreported problem. We'll put resources in our episode description. But that's kind of the down and dirty, the highlights of the real Lorena Bobbitt story. It's not just this crazy woman who cut off her husband's penis. It's actually a lot more than that. And I didn't realize that whenever, like, I first heard the story and I was like, yeah, I'm just going to do this because it's funny. But it's actually not. It's serious and kind of sad.
It is pretty sad.
What blows my mind is that the two of them, neither one of them, served any jail time for anything. Like, he didn't serve jail time for the domestic abuse, for the marital rape, for any of it. She didn't serve jail time for dismembering him.
Right.
And could have been, like, I would think it could have been, like, an attempted murder charge because, I mean, he could have bled out. I mean, who knows what could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it just blows my mind that both were in the wrong here and neither one of them served time.
Right. It's very sad.
It is very sad. But it sounds like he owned it to try to make money out of it. So, again, it makes me harder to feel empathy for him for that.
But he didn't really own it because it's not like he ever owned up to what he did.
Right, sorry.
I mean, like, he profited.
He profited, off of the yes.
situation. But he didn't ever come out and say, yeah, you're right, I raped my wife on multiple occasions.
Right.
And that's why she did this. You know what I mean? Like, he's still a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Just saying it. Like, and even he had issues with his second wife.
Right.
Yeah, so, he didn't learn.
That's unfortunate. But thank you for pointing that out.
But, you know, men who are violent, who have history of domestic violence and inflicting it, I mean, it's not like it's just one relationship that they are violent in. It's relationship to relationship, you know? So
for sure.
He didn't get punished for it per se. He didn't have any consequence for it other than having his penis, you know, taken off.
But like I said, he was like, after that, he was almost put on a pedestal.
Right. So he didn't learn from it.
He was treated like royalty after that happened. Well, on that note.
But thank you for telling us that story.
You're welcome.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in this week to our true crime episode. You can always catch us at thetipsyghost.com and find our socials from there, or send us an email to thetipsyghost@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you anytime.
Please give us a 5-star rating and a great review anywhere you listen to podcasts. We would greatly appreciate it, and it really does help.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. We will catch you guys next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.